I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Mary Hurlburt. Mary is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Lifespan Credit Counseling Services. Our subject today is something that, unfortunately, a lot of people have to deal with, and that is, what happens if you've got a debt and you're trying to settle that, probably with a collection agency?
Yes, yeah, settling with the collection agency happens a lot this time of year. If there's a debt that's hindering your ability to move forward in life, if you're a business owner, it's going to be harder to get a loan. It's going to be harder to work with your own financial institution if this is sitting on your credit report. So if you've decided it needs to be paid and that settling is the way to go, this is a pretty good time of year to do it.
Well, and it's not unusual to have to deal with this, is it? Because it seems like large companies and even hospitals and organizations like that are very quick to turn over their receivables to collection agencies.
They are much quicker to turn them over today than they used to be.
Are they selling to these collection agencies? I mean, why do they turn it over so quick now?
They turn it over so quickly because hospitals are the ones that don't get paid. The medical people are the last to be paid. And like everybody else, they need money. Mm-hmm. So this is the easiest way for them to get enough money to continue.
You say that this is a good time of year to try to settle with collection agency. Why is that?
This is the time of year when families have extra money in their pockets if they're getting a tax refund. So collection agencies are willing to talk debt settlement.
So there, you can negotiate with these people.
You can negotiate with a collection agency, yes.
Let's talk about something else, and that is this whole concept of student loans. So we have all of these young people out there today who were able to get so much in the way of student loans because they just were. They didn't have to have credit. They didn't have to have a job. But yet they were able to get student loans, many of which are government loans. You can't negotiate with those, right?
You cannot negotiate with those, and you cannot include your student loans in a bankruptcy. However, the government now is working on programs to help students repay those loans because many people took out $125,000 loans to work in professions where they're only going to make $25,000 a year.
If you are in a situation where you don't have a lot of cash, but you have loans, they're in collection, you know, what are some steps that you should do as you're trying to work through this process?
Okay, the very first thing is make sure that everything you hear is also in writing. Make sure the collection agency truly owns that account because it may have been sold two or three times. Insist on proof that they own it, and that means they should also have a copy of your written contract. Make sure that you have in writing, if you send us $250, we will consider this account as paid in full. And then what I tell everybody from that point on, you staple the canceled check or whatever to your will, and you keep them together until you die because those things have a way of reappearing.
Mary, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they contact Lifespan?
Okay, anybody that wants to get in touch with us can call me personally. My phone number is 513-476-6096.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Mary Hurlburt. Mary is an outreach coordinator with Lifespan, Inc., a credit counseling agency. This topic is very close to my heart and Tom's as well. We have a daughter who's a junior in high school, and we're doing the college search thing and exploring various colleges, and it is astounding to me what the price of college education is these days. Many people think that they can just fill the void or fill the gap in terms of the monetary need with student loans, but there's a lot of things people don't realize about student loans. Maybe they should know before they enter into them, isn't it?
Well, there are a lot. And the first thing is, I hate to say it, there are a lot of college students whose number one plan is, I will graduate and file bankruptcy on my student loans. That is not going to happen. You're not allowed to include them in student loans. The other thing is a lot of students are getting for the private loans, federal loans, the student is signing for those, and they need a co-signer. I can't tell you the number of grandparents I'm running into or who are co-signing for all of their grandchildren to go to college, and they don't understand that that means if the student can't find a job, can't repay that loan at all, that the grandparents may be responsible.
And you need to have a reality check as to look at college education as an investment. If you're borrowing the money for that investment, you know, don't borrow $100,000 to have a career that's going to pay you $25,000 a year, because you'll never be able to pay that loan back.
And if you think that you're going to go on to some kind of postgraduate work, don't use all of your money in one place. You don't want to use it all in the first 4 years. So you may want to think about choosing a college that you can afford.
Absolutely. There are a ton of PhDs and attorneys who will say, well, shoot, I'm paying two mortgages. My student loan payment and my mortgage payment are within $100 of each other. As far as age groups go, the younger people are suffering, believe it or not, even more than those of us that tend to be a little older, because we're holding on to our jobs.
Why do you think it's so easy for a student to get a federal student loan when you can't even get a credit card?
I'm not sure what the government thinks about it, but the fact is higher education pays off. You're going to, especially when the economy was good, if you graduated from college, you knew you would be making more money than the average high school graduate was. So why not give them money?
Thank you so much. Again, if folks would like more information on Lifespan and get in touch with you, what's your information, your contact information?
Just call me directly. The number is 513-476-6096.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, one question that we get oftentimes, especially this time of year, given it's tax filing season, is the question of which type of individual retirement account or IRA is best suited for a person.
Well, and the answer is always, first, make sure that if you have the opportunity to contribute to a 401k, you make as much of a deduction contribution into your 401k to take advantage of your employer's match before you put money in an IRA.
And that's really critical, because the employer's match is just like free money. And if you don't contribute as much as you can to take advantage of that, you're literally leaving free dollars on the table. It's like getting a raise that you've walked away from.
Well, and then if you compare contributing to a 401k to contributing to an IRA, after you've maximized the match, it's really a question of, are you better investing your own money in your own IRA account, or do you want to invest through your employer-sponsored plan? And that answer is different for each person.
Yes, the benefit of a traditional IRA is that the contributions that you make, if you can qualify, you can make a tax-deductible IRA in the year that you make the contribution. That means that if you make a $4,000 contribution into your IRA, you can reduce your taxable income by $4,000. Now, this year, IRA contribution limit for people who are under the age of 50 is $5,000. If you're 50 or over, then the amount that you can contribute is $6,000.
You can make that contribution as late as April 15th of the following year and still get the deduction in the prior year.
But what you have to realize is, if you make that contribution using pre-tax dollars, that means that you'll be taxed in the future when you withdraw the money from the IRA. This includes your contribution plus the earnings that it's accumulated over that period of time. So if you expect to be in a lower tax bracket when you retire, then you will see the greatest benefit from a traditional IRA. And just remember that you also have to start taking what's called required minimum distributions from a traditional IRA at the age of 70 and a half.
And that brings up one of the advantages of a Roth IRA, which is that you do not have to make those required minimum distributions. So if you have a Roth IRA, you never have to take distributions if you don't need them.
And the reason that's important is because if you have other assets and you want to leave your Roth IRA to beneficiaries, then it's a nice way to actually allow that Roth to become part of their inheritance.
And it just gives you more flexibility over managing your income once you're age 70 and a half. The primary advantage of the Roth IRA is the fact that you don't pay tax on the withdrawals when you take them out, as long as they've been in at least 5 years.
So in other words, you don't get to take a tax deduction up front when you make a contribution to a Roth, but you don't have to pay tax on the back end when you start to withdraw the money from the Roth IRA. And I think what we often recommend to certain clients is to have money in two different pots. You want money in your pre-tax pot, and you want money in your post-tax pot. So it's not a bad idea to have some money in a Roth IRA. It just gives you more flexibility when you're planning your retirement income. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, we're right in the heart of tax filing season, and many taxpayers have already started to get their refund checks in the mail, many of which are fairly good chunks of money. You know, they say the average refund this year is somewhere around $3,000. So the question becomes, what do you do when you get the refund hitting your bank account?
One of the first things you should do is look at your emergency fund. Financial planners recommend that you have an emergency fund that would cover up to 6 months of your normal living expenses. And having just been through this recession with all the layoffs, I think everybody realizes that, you know, most jobs are not for life anymore, and it's important to have that emergency fund even more so than it used to be.
And the question becomes, where do you put the money for your emergency fund? And you want to make sure it's someplace where you can get to it easily. And certainly we all know that savings accounts aren't paying much these days, but try to find at least a savings account or some kind of a money fund that pays as high a rate of interest as you can.
Right, but just make sure you segregate that so that it's not easily spent, that you can't easily transfer it into your checking account and just all of a sudden whittle it away and your emergency fund's gone and you didn't solve any emergencies.
After you've established your emergency fund, then the next thing that I think you should do is pay down your highest interest rate credit card.
You should not have a high interest rate credit card that you have a balance on, but yes, many people are unfortunately get stuck in a situation where they have to do that. And you want to whittle that down as quickly as possible. And the best way to do it is pay off the high rate ones first.
And certainly if you have not had a chance to refinance your mortgage because you couldn't come up with the closing costs, or maybe you just didn't have enough to put down in terms of your equity share, you may want to use some part of your refund to do that. That's also a good idea, because to the extent you can actually refinance your home, take advantage of a lesser interest rate over the long term, you're going to be much better off.
You may have the greatest payback on your investment if it enables you to refinance when you couldn't otherwise, if you can knock 1 or 2 points off your mortgage. Another alternative would be to put more money into your retirement account, or just have a taxable investment that's really for retirement purposes.
This refund enables you to help move your college savings along. That would also be a good way to take advantage of the refund. Put it into an account that's a college savings fund account, even if your child is very young. We know that you're going to need it as they grow older.
Yeah, and finally, one use for your refund, for a very small portion of your refund, is have fun with some of it. You know, reward yourself for being responsible and funding your emergency fund, your retirement, paying down debt, or whatever you did with it that was responsible, and take a small portion of it and entertain yourself.
And some people like to use it for, in part, to pay for some of their vacation. Just be careful, though, because you don't want to waste all your refund on something that's really not going to provide a long-term investment for you, or even create a lasting memory. The refund is a nice thing to have, so make sure that you use it wisely. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Steve Stevens. Steve is the president of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce. There is so much excitement that's going on the Northern Kentucky side of the river. Last week or two, we've just heard of the new UpTech initiative that is coming on here. Actually, partnership with Northern Kentucky University College of Informatics, as well as the E-Zone and many other organizations. What else? Let's talk about some other exciting things happening on this side of the river.
I think, things are really looking brighter all the time here. I think our unemployment rate's dropping. That's always a bright spot. People are getting reemployed that maybe have been sitting on the sidelines. We're seeing a lot of growth in areas like manufacturing and some of those areas, so that I think things are going to continue to improve over this next year, which is really encouraging. But we have some assets now that we didn't have, like the College of Informatics at NKU, and that helps us sell our region. You know, whether it's on this side of the river or the other side of the region, we were looking for things that we can market to businesses, prospective newcomers to this community, but also how do you help people expand? So I think we're positioned pretty well right now.
And provide jobs, right?
That's one of the most frustrating elements of this whole situation currently, is the fact that we do know we're over 8% unemployment, and we have got, you know, just from our own view, we can see on our jobs website that the Chamber manages, that we see postings daily. We see some of them sit there a long time, and the reason they're there for a long time is because the skill sets are not present in the people that we have currently.
But what I really think is wonderful is that I do think our educational institutions, including Northern Kentucky University and certainly Gateway Community College, these organizations have taken it upon themselves to interact with the business community, find out what skills are needed, and then we're training people, we're educating people to fill that skill set.
Absolutely. I think the folks at both institutions you named, you know, are boots on the ground that are getting into businesses more often, and they're talking to them. I know when I go out and visit with companies periodically and they tell me of a workforce problem or issue, I can pick up the phone and call them, and they will return that call right away to that business and sit down and really try to figure out a strategy. If they are not offering programs currently, can they do something to tailor what they have to really deliver the training for the skill sets that are required? You know, we're a conduit of all sorts. We've got to have our antenna up a whole lot about, you know, business needs, business problem solving, things like that. And then when we hear of those things, we have to be kind of in the know about everything in some ways about this community so that we can channel the resources to the businesses that really are looking for help in some ways, or an incentive program that they may not know about that they can capitalize on to help them expand, just a wide range of things. And some of the stuff can come right from this chamber because we have a very capable, talented workforce division. We have folks that are involved in international trade to help people get into the business of doing trade in foreign countries because our markets are not that hot right now, you know. And, you know, we have some expertise that we offer to businesses, and hopefully they can discover us if they're not already members of us to try to help them.
So if people out there listening would like to know more about the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, how can they reach you?
First, look at our website, www.nkychamber.com, or just call us at 859-578-8800.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Steve Stevens. Steve is the president of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, and you've been very active in our community, in our region, and really in the state. And the chamber does a lot of things that I think most people don't realize, including government advocacy. What's going on right now in terms of what your role is in helping move legislation along in the state of Kentucky?
We're in the middle of a legislative session right now. It started in January and finishes in April, and this is a budget session, so it's a little more challenging because that's a big thing that is absolutely a mandatory item that has to be done during the session. And then, of course, redistricting comes around once every 10 years, and that's a real challenge, very volatile, very, you know, high tension. So it really kind of squeezes the time that is allowed for other productive pieces of legislation. We are involved in a lot of things, but one of the main things that we're working on this year is a jobs package. And the jobs package is something that we sort of had some ideas about that we really felt like could really move us forward, not only this region, but the entire Commonwealth. And it's really a three-legged stool. And the idea behind it is, first of all, we want to make sure we retain the jobs that we have currently and the companies in this region. So we look at ourselves and say, how can we be competitive so we're as attractive as any other region, any other state, so people aren't lured away or something looks more attractive? The second is, we know that there are companies right here today, these existing companies, that have the capacity and probably even the desire to expand. But what keeps them from doing that? They're uncertain. Sometimes they need capital. They need some changes to laws and so forth. So we've looked at a set of things that might improve that situation. And the final thing is, how do we create new jobs? How do we attract companies here? But really, how do we start some new businesses? UpTech is one of those ways, but there are things that really can help promote entrepreneurship and small business startups.
When you say we're looking at that. Who is we?
The Northern Kentucky Chamber first put this program together and put it out, and we have a few partners that we always like to talk with first who totally embraced it. And those are some other chambers that are in the metropolitan areas. The State Chamber of Commerce in Kentucky has really bought into this idea, and they have helped promote it. And now we are absolutely creating this as a statewide initiative, not just Northern Kentucky, but we started the whole ball rolling, and it is really picking up momentum.
You know, there's been a lot of discussion recently about this whole concept of one side of the river, Cincinnati or Northern Kentucky, poaching companies from the other side and from state to state. What do you think about that?
Well, I know because I'm personally involved with our economic development entity in Northern Kentucky, and it has been the same for the Cincinnati side. There is a truce of sorts. I mean, we don't go after each other's businesses
within here in the region,
in the local. What we can't control as much is what the states do to try to help, you know, bring one company from one state to the other, which is what happened recently. You know, I think we will always try to make sure the playing field is level, but there will always be things that don't make us competitive with one another. We have to just accept the fact that from time to time, somebody's going to slip away from us. I know several have come from Cincinnati over the last decade or so and located in Northern Kentucky. Now it's going the opposite way right now, and we'll probably have a pendulum swing forever.
The whole idea of gaming, I know you and I have talked about this many times, but Kentucky still doesn't have gaming legislation. Where does that stand?
Well, it is moving now, finally. It appears that a bill is about to be dropped, and by the time this program airs, it will, I think, and it will be an opportunity for the citizens of Kentucky to vote to make this the law of the land. That's some progress.
If folks would like to get more information about the chamber, what's your contact information?
You can always check our website at www.nkychamber.com. You can also go to NKY Chamber on our social media, Facebook and Twitter, as well as 859-578-8800.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Leslie Spencer, who is the executive director of the Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation, and Bill Keating, who's currently on the board of directors of the Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation and a former chair. I didn't know that the Cincinnati Sports Corporation could have such a big business, but how many hotel rooms did you tell me you fill on an annual basis in Cincinnati, in Greater Cincinnati?
We deliver 35 to 40,000 room nights in terms of the sporting events that we bring into the city. The last decade, more than 225,000 room nights for an impact of about $66 million.
And Bill, let's talk about the founding and why the Cincinnati Sports Corporation even came into existence so many years ago and what its mission is.
The idea was to try to bring more sporting events to Cincinnati. And the best way for me to explain it was back in 1970, it brought in the U.S. National Swimming Championships with Mark Spitz and Gary Hall and all the great swimmers. And our coaches were there telling us, you can get there. And we watched them compete. We realized they were human. And 2 years later, we put two people on the U.S. Olympic team and come back with gold medals. Another woman set a world record. So the idea of planting the seed with people, you know, begin with the end in mind, show them what's available by these athletic activities and contests coming to Cincinnati. You know, your daughter plays soccer. You know, if she sees, you know, Mia Hamm and the rest of them come in, that's going to change her focus.
She actually did get to go see Mia Hamm.
It probably changed her focus on how well she played.
And I want to talk about girls in a little bit because I think that's really an amazing component of this discussion. But Leslie, before we do that, let's talk about you because you are the executive director of this not-for-profit sports corporation, which I find very interesting. I mean, you don't look like you're a, quote, jock, but you're very athletic and probably have to be somewhat competitive, don't you, to get these teams to come to Cincinnati?
Absolutely. There are 200 organizations around the country that do what we do in Greater Cincinnati in bidding on and securing sporting events to come to our region. It is very competitive. We go over and above in hospitality as well as servicing in order to secure that business and bring it back in the future. We've got a lot of events that actually return annually or multiple years. So it's very competitive. It's probably the best job that I could have. And I feel like I'm an athlete. I may not look like one, but one time I was.
I was going to say, you played in high school. You played in college. You were telling me that your whole family, just sports was just part of who your family was.
Yeah, I was fortunately to grow up. My father, he ran an international basketball business. So I was very young age engaged in the sports business world and carried it on in college as well as with Nike Play and the International Olympic Academy and was blessed to get the job opportunity in my own hometown to sell the city.
Well, how challenging is it to compete with, I assume, a whole lot of different cities for all these various sporting events?
We have a lot of attributes here in Cincinnati. We are a little gem, I think, in the amateur sports world. So it's not as challenging as those think it is. I think that we have the Midwest appeal, the drivable market. The families can come in on a more affordable budget when competing in our city. Now, in terms of a beach destination or a larger destination, there are some challenges that we do face. And sometimes we win, sometimes we lose.
You know, one thing that would help us over time is we have a limitation on facility sizes. People always want to bring the NCAA championships here. Our facilities aren't big enough. The other issue is dollars to support bid fees. So if people are trying to get interested in our organization, it's really how can they come help us support our bid fees so we can recruit the events here to Cincinnati. And really, we're open to any sports. It's not just baseball or football, but it's all of them.
Well, I was going to ask, Bill, if people listening today are interested in the Cincinnati Sports Corporation and would like to figure out how they can get more involved and engaged, what's your website?
CincySports.org, CincySports.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Leslie Spencer and Bill Keating. Leslie is the executive director of the Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation, which is a not-for-profit organization that brings to our region amateur sports events. And then Bill Keating is a board member and was previously the chair of GCSC. What are some of the events that you can talk about that are coming up soon here in the Cincinnati region?
Sure. In 2012, we actually have a very diverse set of events coming in. Coming this March, 19 through 21, is the USA Fencing North American Cup. You're going to see fencers from every state compete. More than 1,700 Division I, Division II veteran, which is 40 and over, as well as wheelchair fencers that will make up 2,200 competitors competing in 42 different events of all three fencing weapons. In May, we will actually have the USA Men's Gymnastics Junior Olympic Nationals, which we will have competitors from all 50 states vying for the next spot on the Olympic team.
So if people want to learn more about this organization, how can they find out what some of the upcoming events are, Bill?
They can go to our website. And they can call Leslie Spencer. Leslie, you want to give them our address for the website?
The website is cincysports.org, CincySports.org. And our phone number is 513-345-3054.
And if people want to get engaged with the organization, get involved, volunteer, do you look for volunteers?
We always look for volunteers. We look for interns as well. We look for memberships, sponsorships over certain events. We are a 501c3 tax write-off for those companies and businesses. And we look for programming opportunities, too, to partner with an organization would like to get in front of these 50,000 spectators and athletes per year.
Bill, why are you so passionate about this?
You know, I grew up in sports, as most people in my family did. And it was a great experience. And we think the life lessons and discipline you learn is something that the community, and especially the grade schools and high school kids, should be exposed to. So by bringing these events in and planting a seed with these kids, that they chase their dreams, whether it's in sports or in dance or school or whatever, it's something special.
And what about girls? Have you seen that change over the years? I mean, that girls are much more participatory now and very involved?
Very much so. When I grew up, my mother didn't play sports. My sisters didn't play sports because the opportunities weren't there. I had two daughters who competed both in high school and college. And to watch them compete and just see the growth of sports and how competitive it is, I think that's taken girls off the sidelines and put them in the middle of the game in competing. And when that happens in sports, it carries over to life in the business world and everywhere else, and it creates opportunities that they didn't have before.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Milton Dehoney. He is the city manager for the city of Cincinnati. And I know that the streetcar has been certainly a subject of extensive conversation and controversy, and that I believe you perceive to be really an asset for our city.
Well, where it stands right now, we are getting closer to setting a groundbreaking date, and that would allow for the beginning of construction of the line. I continue to believe that it is something that's going to have long-term benefits for the city. And when you look around the country, there are 60, 70 other cities that have the same viewpoint. So my thinking has always been we're either going to be competitive or we're going to get left behind.
Assuming that you set this groundbreaking date pretty soon, how long approximately will the construction period start? When will we actually see a streetcar, you know, starting to move?
We would not see a streetcar actually operating in the city for about 2 years, because there's a pretty long construction process, but you would see signs of it coming together a lot sooner than that, because within about a month, we'll actually choose the car that we would commission to be made, and so people would see it. And then when it arrived, people would see that. When we do the maintenance facility, people would see that. So there will be signs. We've already tagged the stops and put signs on that.
It still seems, though, that there's groups of people who are trying to stop this. And is it going forward for sure?
It is going forward. There have been two unsuccessful ballot attempts to stop it. And so I don't really see another ballot initiative, but there are some people who still are not supportive.
And I know that there's been some discussions about the county owning the utilities and therefore the city can't move forward. What's that about?
The utility issue is focused simply on the utilities that are underground or under the streetcar line, so to speak. Do those utilities have to be moved? And if they have to be moved, how far and who pays?
In Denver was pretty phenomenal. That their case, though, was a light rail system. Do you see the light rail system in a city like Denver being equivalent to the same kind of economic growth as what you anticipate around the streetcar?
It's not exactly the same, but the fact that it's fixed rail will stimulate development. And when you go to cities that have already done it, it's just all you have to do is look around. Entrepreneurs see that fixed rail and know I have an audience passing me every single day, and I want to have my business as close to that as possible.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Today we're going to talk about something that is near and dear to our hearts, and that is taxes. But unfortunately, this discussion is going to be about the fact that Tom and I both believe, as do many others, that tax rates are going nowhere but up in the near future.
Not only do we believe that, all we have to do is look at the laws that are in place today and know that will happen unless new laws get passed. And given the Congress and president that we have currently and how opposed they are to each other's policies, it's unlikely that new legislation is going to pass through Congress and get signed by the president. So tax rates are going up next year in 2013. There's a 3.8% additional tax on investment income for certain people.
Well, those people are the so-called rich, and those are people who make more than $250,000 if they file a joint return.
Right, and that tax rate will increase by 3.8% as a result of health care reform, but there's another even bigger tax increase that will occur, and again, this will primarily hit higher income people, although these tax rates will hit virtually everyone, and that's the expiration of the Bush tax cuts, which will push the top rate with that 3.8% from its current 35% to about 43% on certain types of investment income.
You know, Tom, those Bush tax cuts, it's interesting. They still go by that term because that has been actually our tax rate structure for almost a decade now. So effectively what's going to happen is the lowest tax rate will be somewhere in the 15% range, and the highest tax rate, like you said, will be 43% or more because of the extra surtax in certain instances. So the question becomes, what should people do? Because in addition to the tax rates, and that's all we seem to hear about is the increase in tax rates, but there are a lot of deductions that are either going to go away, credits that are going to go away, and phase outs that are going to become more difficult to achieve in terms of being able to take deductions.
Right, and even alternative minimum tax for middle income taxpayers will be greater, assuming that no legislation takes place to change that law.
Well, I think that's fascinating because you never hear about that. If and when the Bush tax cuts go away, many middle income taxpayers are going to be penalized because there's lots of provisions in there that are helping them today pay less tax, which, by the way, almost 50% of Americans don't pay any income tax today. So the question becomes, what should people do knowing that taxes are going to go up? I think people need to design a strategy and start executing on that plan, because just sitting around waiting is not going to do anything. It's actually going to put you in a bad position because you're going to have to hurry and make decisions quickly that may not be in your best interest.
Well, and you may have to hurry and make decisions quickly because you may not know what's going to happen more clearly until after the November election. But it's pretty likely that capital gains tax rates are going to go up. So you should position yourself that you may want to consider taking capital gains now being sometime in 2012, because if you get them in 2013, they almost certainly will be taxed at a higher rate. We just don't know if it'll be at a 18% rate or a 24% rate or some higher rate.
And the other thing is, look at your overall investment portfolio now. Make sure it's structured to minimize that additional 3.8% tax that's going to come into play in 2013, unless it's repealed. And then look at your business status. How are you operating as a company? If you're a pass-through entity, that may not be in your best interest anymore. These are just some things you need to think about. Take action now. Start planning today. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.